Naturecast.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello, and welcome to the Social Psychic Radio Show, featuring Jason Zook. In uncertain times, we must change our focus and priorities. This show will highlight social justice issues with the goal of expanding minds and increasing unity, love, and mutual respect for ourselves and our planet. We support the Black Lives Matter movement. Our show aspires to promote social spirituality, which simply means that by coming together, we can solve any of our problems, including the goal of bringing an end to all forms of hate, discrimination, bias, or oppression. We must protect our environment, reform our criminal justice system, and protect every citizen from police brutality. When we come together, it becomes possible to bridge the gaps that plague our society and divide us from within. We the people means everyone.
Hello and welcome to the Social Psychic Radio Show. This is Jason Zook. It's a great pleasure. I have a special guest, Brett Lockett, on the show today. Brett's a transformative loving relationship coach, a renowned speaker, and entrepreneur dedicated to guiding individuals on their journey to deep intimacy and authenticity. Adept in the metaphysical and esoteric realms, including the Hermetic principles and the Chinese I Ching, Brett is a modern-day alchemist trained to facilitate life transformations. His approach combines ancient wisdom with cutting-edge insights from paradigms such as gene keys, a transformative system for growth using your DNA, breathwork, and other methodologies that enhance our abilities to rebalance energies while creating profound personal growth. Drawing on his evolution from an NFL athlete to a spiritual guide, Brett inspires resilience and radical change. Through Lockett Consulting and strategic partnerships with thought leaders such as the Flow Research Collective, Brett empowers people and businesses to discover their purpose and thrive consciously. Brett's mission is deeply rooted in love, aiming to elevate well-being while unlocking the highest potential within humanity through love itself. It's a great pleasure. I welcome Brett to the show.
Jason, what kind of intro? Did you write that? Man, that's a hell of an intro. I appreciate it, man. It's good to be here.
Good to have you, man. I'm so appreciative of you coming on the show. I think I've told you this for a while. We've had a chance to talk just through LinkedIn and getting to know each other. And it's an honor to share your information and insight with our audience because I've been very deeply interested. I have my own theory about when you're a professional athlete, for example, in a sport, that you have this key intuitive ability with concentration to execute plays and be at your peak. And then also combining that with spirituality, it's like when we crossed paths, I was like, damn, you need to come on the show because I feel the audience needs to know about this because it's almost like you're proving my theory that I've internally held for a while. And I wanted to ask you before we even start here, if you agree that as an athlete, you've had this intuitive insight that helps you not only in your sport, but in the game of life as well.
Jason, first of all, interesting hypothesis and case study. I always love a good case study, right? Trying to prove the masses wrong. I get it. For me, I always believe that we all have an intuitive ability that we just don't even pick up on, or maybe sometimes we call it a sixth sense, but we really don't hone in on it enough to where we actually work on it to develop it as a real gift. Every great athlete has this sixth sense, right? You see the guy who catches the ball and knows exactly when the buzzer is going to go off, or a quarterback that's sitting in the pocket and all these guys are rushing at him, trying to kill him. And he's able to still keep his eyes downfield and make the throw or avoid a guy last second. We all have this intuition or sixth sense about us. And the more you work on it and the more you develop it, the more you get to use it. To answer your question, I truly believe it. And you, I know you mentioned Flow Research Collective in the bio that you so eloquently spoke about, but the Flow Research Collective is all about understanding that sixth sense, if you will. It's not necessarily focused on intuition, but it's focused on being in flow, right? And being in flow allows you to utilize those gifts because you're not focused on one thing. And actually, when you do focus and when you can get into a state of, call it hypotransient frontality, where your brain turns off, it allows you to slow your brain down. It's almost like when you're in a meditative state with your eyes opening. That's the hard part for a lot of people, is like, how do you get there? And for me, I had to really understand the science behind flow, and then using the metaphysical to be able to expand on that to a higher level. Because I'm always looking at, how can I take things, utilize them in my life to either grow something, to be able to transmute energy, to be able to alchemize whatever it is that I'm here to create, which is, and I believe we're all here to create it, it's magic.
I love that. It's so very true. First of all, I appreciate your candor in sharing that, because that gives me not the case study, but at least further insight.
I get it.
I have to ask you this. You have so many different faculties to you that you're gifted with, whether I'm keeping you humble, of course, but I appreciate it. Having the ability to excel in different things while overcoming life's challenges. We all have those. I want to ask you, what's been the most significant and inspirational experience that you've gone through in the last 4 years?
When it rains, it pours, they say, right? And for me, I've been on this quest of just life, like finding more about life, like living life, experiencing life, pushing my fears to the boundaries. And really, these last, call it 3 years, have been absolutely magical for me, because I've traveled more in these 3 years than I ever had my entire life. That has led to all of these incredible experiences. From, I'd probably say the biggest one that changed everything for me was getting certified in teaching breathwork, because it wasn't just a certification. You can become a life coach, you can become a lifeguard, whatever it be. There's specific certifications that you have to go through, and some are more rigorous than others. And you hear breath work and you think, oh, okay, we're just going to breathe, and I'm just going to learn breathing techniques and understand how to maybe hold space for people, maybe lead individuals versus leading groups. I went into it thinking just that. It wasn't a quote unquote just certification. It was like an anointing to be able to actually teach individuals breathwork, because I had to go through all of the shit myself. Like, I had to transition and transmute all the energy within me to be able to teach. And so it was a week long. Each day was grueling. It was like 6 a.m. yoga, which yoga is not grueling, but like, you're up at 6 and you're going to sleep at 10 o'clock at night, 12 o'clock at night sometimes.
That can be intense.
It was intense. We had cold plunges and having to go into a river. And I hate the cold, Jason. I hate.
So do I. But right, I mean, you have to take a cold. I have so many people I know. One of my best friends became a Wim Hof instructor.
There you go.
He's bringing me to the fold. And after talking to you and other people, I'm like, I'm going to have to do this.
Hey, listen, I do it from time to time, but I despise a cold. So
that's
like,
for me, to Florida, get away.
Yeah, I get it. I'm in LA. It's the same thing. But that's the pushing yourself to the boundary, to in each facet physically. We did breathwork 3 days in a row. And it's not like breathwork for 10 minutes. It's breathwork for 35 minutes. And then get up after you just bawled your eyes out on the yoga mat, or you're just coming out of it. And then you got to go hold space for the next person. And then learning about how to operate a business in breathwork. It was the most intense training that I had ever done before in my life. I broke through so many different things that week that I never realized I was still holding on to. Past relationships, past childhood traumas, leaving the NFL prematurely, getting hurt, like things that I thought I was done with. From that whole week, it was like, it just all came out of me. And it was almost like this rebirth of who it is that I'm supposed to be. That kind of culminated on top of, that was like the first thing. Like before that, the year before, I went to Europe, and that completely opened my eyes to a new way of living, a new culture, just expanding my consciousness there. And then in August this past year, I was in Shasta. Mount Shasta is the, you know, they call it the root chakra of the world. There's 7 different places around the world. Egypt is one. Peru, Machu Picchu is, I think, the heart chakra of the world. Went to Mount Shasta for a retreat and did breath work for 2 hours straight. And that was wild. That was wild. Like at a certain point, you're like, am I even breathing right now? Like, I don't know what happened. It wasn't one experience. I think it's, life is an injection of multiple nuances and phases throughout your life that catapult you to certain quantum leaps, if you will, in your life. It's never one thing. You're like, oh, what's the one thing that's gotten you here? I wish I had the answer for you, but it's not one thing.
It's like the whole. It's all of everything we've been through in our collective years living and before that.
It is, because there's no one thing that can push you to where you're supposed to be. It all starts with something else, and it leads into other things. I've just been pushing boundaries, pushing what I think reality is, pushing who I think that I am. and not really having an expectation or a place to go. I don't really think there's a destination where I know we set goals and things like that. And that's our ego speaking. Today, I'm more about setting specific goals to help other people, to change the dynamics of the world, to change how society functions. I'm not thinking on an individual level. I'm thinking on a collective level. I'm on an Einstein, Tesla sort of wavelength on how can I catapult society to where they don't have to deal with poverty and famine and racism and diversity and socio-political and economical issues. It's much bigger than myself right now. And it's a beautiful place to be because it's taken a while to get here. You know, now that I'm here, it's like I would never go back.
And it's interesting as you're talking because I get energy from when you're speaking and I pick up stuff. And I have to ask you this question because I feel like this is something. As a former athlete, retired athlete, you have a platform. Yeah, you've used your platform in wise ways to do advocacy work. I saw just you could Google you that you've advocated for PETA and you've advocated for different causes, the No Hate campaign, I think it is. And that's very impressive. And I want to ask you about that. What do you think is the most important part of having a platform and advocating? Because Kaepernick and all these things are so controversial to part of half the country. I 100% support everything he's doing, everything everybody's doing. And you're part of that. So I want to ask you, what's your viewpoint on that? As having a platform, as a retired athlete, just being involved in everything, but then also having the courage 10 years ago to advocate for these different things and seeing where that took you.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the biggest thing for me is if I'm a role model in society, and I know sometimes we don't choose to be role models. Sometimes we don't choose to be leaders. I think some of the greatest leaders in the world have been anointed by mankind. When you look at Mother Teresa, when you look at Martin Luther King, they came up doing something that they loved and they were passionate about. And then society said, hey, we want you to lead us. I look at myself somewhat similar. Like I don't really call myself, hey, I want to awaken people's souls. That wasn't something that I necessarily wanted to do. I think it was a calling. And I think I found love in helping other people. And then people see certain things in me and they're like, hey, why don't you do this? This would be helpful. But in terms of having a platform, I think that once you have a voice, and I think that's the biggest thing that when you look across the board at all people, it's like the ones who are silenced, the ones who are not able to express themselves, are not able to truly be free, are the ones that are always that always feel limited, that always are feeling restricted. And having a platform is extremely valuable, but it's also in a place of responsibility because you're responsible to the masses, you're responsible to whoever's following you to be able to provide them with the right information. The problem occurs when you have a platform and you're trying to exploit it for your own personal gain. And that's the thing that I never really wanted to do. I've always had a nonprofit component in everything that I've done. When I was playing football, I had the Looking Forward Foundation, which was for after school programs and the youth and creating football programs. And then I did a Super Bowl giveaway one year where I flew two people to the Super Bowl and gave them tickets. And it was great. The platform is for the people. And the problem with where things are going right now, and we're starting to see more of it, where people are creating platforms for people. So platforms are great if you use them the right way. And that's what I've always tried to do. I've always tried to empower people. I want to liberate people. I want people to be happy, motivated, joyous, passionate, loving towards each other. I want people to not have to worry, not have to have anxiety, not have to have stress. We shouldn't have to live in that way. That's the way things are structured, but that's not the way things are supposed to be. That's always been my agenda. And I've always felt like that ever since a young kid. It was like, I hated seeing people in pain. I hate seeing people hungry and people who are afraid and in fear. I don't care where you're from, what country you live in. I want people to be free.
Absolutely. 100%. With the whole George Floyd thing that happened in 2020, it was a real reset button for me personally. I redid my show on it and focused more on social justice, protested about 5 times at the time. It really opened my own eyes and what my priorities are in life. And we were talking about racism earlier. That's one of the biggest evils we need to eradicate amongst other things. And the way my spirit guides when we talk about racism is we're all like Cadbury eggs. The gooey stuff inside our spirit, but we're all the same. Like we are so silly and immature as a race, as a species, to think that our color is different of who we are. I wish that people would just sit across the table and really take stock and inventory of their insecurities and overcome those things and realize that we're all the same. We're all one. Yeah. We're all collectively one, like a bunch of blades of grass that you walk away and you can see the grass. We're a living thing within ourselves. Our spirits and our energies are all interconnected.
We are, but the problem is that diversity really stems from religion. Religion is great. And if you're religious and you're listening to this, more power to you. I wouldn't say I'm religious, but I am extremely spiritual and I believe in a God. Religion is segmented though. What it does is it creates a group here, creates a group to the left, it creates a group to the right. Everybody is almost arguing over the same thing.
A term just to say for Christianity, Judaism, and all share the same holy sites. And it's, I became Catholic when I was 26 and then became psychic after that. And my spiritual views, I'm still very spiritual. But I was also raised in a household where religion was a private thing between ourselves, goal line, so to speak, that my worldview changed after becoming psychic and spiritual and had a mediumship when my grandfather passed, because it changes your whole concept of things, I should say. It makes you look at things deeper.
It does. It really does. And again, I believe that we should all have something that we hold dear that allows us to connect with a higher power, whatever it is, whether it's science, whether it's religion, whatever you believe. Again, the challenge and the biggest issues that I see across the board, specifically what the Middle East has been fighting over, and Israel and now Lebanon and Palestine, it's all based on religion. It's all based on sites. It's all based on what color was God? What color was Jesus? Where was he? Was he in Palestine? Was he in Jerusalem? It's always been this argument.
They also talk about peace and loving one another.
They are.
And it's a similar concept. So why can't we all just bridge those gaps?
If you actually go back and look at the original documents and like the tablets from Sumer and the historical documents, a lot of those religious documents have been rewritten over and over.
Oh, correct. It's like the telephone game. And it changes, and it's based on who's in charge and what they want. It's
exactly. Please, I like to err more on the side of generality as opposed to specifics, seeing what resonates with my soul, because you go into anything, you have things that feel good and things that feel off. And if something feels off, it's your body, your DNA telling you that this isn't right. When I hear things, I'm like, sounds interesting, but it doesn't sound true. Or I may hear and be like, that's interesting, and it actually does sound true. Let me resonate on that. And I don't believe anybody truly knows it all.
Correct.
You may know some things or some facts, but it's imagine looking at a vehicle from like directly in front of it. Right. And further you step back, like you don't know what it is. You don't know if it's just a big gray block. Right. And if the whole time you thought that was the moon and you step further and further back and you realize it's just a Toyota, right? you've been fooled. And so I think that's how we really are looking at this world, is that the more information you gain over your lifetime, the more as a whole we gain more information, the more the world that we live in is very different than the world that we're perceiving.
That's so true. You're right about that. And I just test this in myself when I go through life changes. I've had some very positive ones recently. Those life changes for me, it made me refocus. And it's all about paradigms. That was the biggest I learned in college, like paradigm. So I'm at a table, and a paradigm of it being a table, I'm sitting at it, but I could go under it for shelter. I could stand on it for leverage. And that's the same object. So if you look at your life in a paradigm, and that's what the Gene Keys teaches you, is how to look at the world from taking the conglomeration of all these different ideas like I Ching and synchronicity and metaphysical concepts that I've read already. It makes me say, wow, this is something that I can buy into, because I want to learn more about I Ching, but I want to also know more about how I can improve my DNA and build myself from within, but not only help myself, but then help those around me, because we're all a collective whole. So it's like the words off that book read to me when I read it. And I want to ask you about, because we've done a little with the Gene Keys stuff. Tell me about your Gene Keys experience, how you got into it, and for our audience a little about what you believe it is and how it's improved your life and what you do to work with others on it.
It's transformed my life, to say the least. It's given me insights about life that I've had questions for since I was a child. And it really connected some dots for me at a very high level. It's funny how the universe comes around, right? Because when you're looking for something, it's seek and you shall find. I had just gotten out of a breakup and I was seeing a doctor, a naturopathic doctor, and she's extremely spiritual. And we're talking about human design, which is something that Gene Keys is correlated with. She was like, you should read this book called Gene Keys. And I was like, what the hell is that about? And she's, it's based off of your genetics. It's based off of your DNA. And I was like, okay, let me look further into it. And so I pull up, and you could pull up your free profile, which is what got me. It's 11 different genes that are based on your specifics, based on your date of birth and where you were born. Pretty much like when I read these four paragraphs on like my life's work, my passion, what I'm here to learn, it resonated with my soul so deeply. I was like, all right, I got to look into this even more. So I download the audiobook and I just start listening to the audiobook. It awakened my soul. It's like the best way I can put it. It literally awakened something deep inside of me. With the Gene Keys, it's a system that allows you, based on your date of birth and where you were born, It's taken from astrology is directly linked into it. We take that information and we create a chart. It's called a hologenetic profile. And that chart has 11 different genes out of the 64 genes that resonate on your frequency based on the time you were born. Mine and yours look completely different, even though we may have some crossover when it comes to the genes. Each one of those codes has a specific frequency within that code that dictates your attitude and how you're perceiving and approaching life. I started to realize what some of my biggest challenges and struggles were that I've been dealing with since a kid, how I was playing those out and why I actually had them, like why I was actually inadequate, why I was struggling with certain things emotionally or physically. It created this pathway, if you will, almost like a game chart. And I don't like to look at it as a game because it's really more of a transmission. But I'm a former athlete, right? And so I'm like, oh, this is fun. And so I start going through it and deciphering it. And it's like Da Vinci's code. And then I start seeing where specific things correlate with me. And then I look at my family's charts. And then I start looking at people that I'm dating. And then I start taking that and I compare it with specific like love cards in the tarot system. I'm just like pulling this apart and dissecting it. And I'm realizing that this is one of the greatest things that's ever been created in the existence of mankind. There's three different paths. There's the activation sequence, which is the beginning path. It's all about your life's work and your passion. And then there's the Venus sequence, which is all about love and your relationship. And Jason, when I go through the second path, it's the deepest part of the gene keys. For me, it was the most profound part because it forces you to look at every single relationship in your life, whether it's a primary partnership with a significant other, or it's family, friends, coworkers, so on and so forth. And it really focuses on you holding up a mirror to yourself. It's you showing yourself exactly who you really are. But it's also helping you understand why you're dealing with this trauma and where it's coming from. And when I really started to break all this stuff down, and then I started going into psychology and all of these different facets, I started to realize that it's literally all based on our childhood. And actually the gene keys is built off of that.
I agree with that 100%. Cause I've had my own healing journey since September, and I learned about my own child trauma through counseling. And I was like, oh my God, I repressed all that. Like my first session with my counselor, I'll start about all these different experiences that I've gone through. And she's like, you have no emotion. Why don't we get you in some, I was like talking matter of fact, like I'm talking right now. And I'm like, blah, 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 my life.
Yeah.
And then she says, she's okay, let's try this. And she did a visualization exercise with me and went back to that traumatic experience. And all of a sudden reliving it. And then that's where the emotion came. And that's when I started to understand how trauma works, where you can get triggered by people or things or whatever. And you don't even realize it. You might be in your own little bubble, but I understand that. And that's where the gene keys, I think, can help you grow with counseling and all these other healing modalities that are out there. That's one of my personal feelings, is that there's so many healing modalities I've learned about through my show, meeting amazing people like yourself and others who have their viewpoints and what they've gotten. The world and the universe is enormous. It's infinite.
It is.
What we can learn and do and get involved in. So it's like having you on to talk about these different concepts. It's so important for me because I want to bring as many different healing modalities that we can have available. And I believe the gene keys is a big part of that. Breathwork's a big part of that. Everything else. You really are doing a lot of services to people and doing things to others. I want to ask you this. What has been your greatest obstacle that you feel like you've mastered finally and overcame in a way without like it really still affecting you or impacting you?
It's a great question, Jason. I think the greatest obstacle for me, and I always go back to this just because it was so difficult. There's a lot of things that are hard in life, right? Could be physically, could be emotionally, could be mentally, could be a little bit of the three, right? Graduating college is not easy. Maybe it is for some people, but not for me. Being in a relationship and having a successful relationship is not easy. But when I look at all these different things, going to the NFL was absolutely the biggest challenge for me because of these factors. The first thing is it's only 1,700 people who play football in the NFL every single year. There's over 100,000 people that play football in college. And then you're also talking about the people who are already playing in the NFL. So that doesn't mean everybody leaves. That means you only are allowing maybe 10 to 15% of new people into the NFL. So it's really less than 200 people, 300 people coming into the NFL a year.
That's crazy when you think about it, because you think of the impact of the NFL in society. The most highly watched event is the Super Bowl. When you actually think about that and think of it in your mind, and you're saying it's a 10% from the college.
It's less than 1% of anybody who's ever picked up a football will play in the NFL, right? It's like 0.000001, which is, it's crazy odds. But I had the gifts athletically. And I know a lot of people who have gifts athletically, but there has to be several other factors that add up, from a little bit of luck to having a good role models around you, having some resources so you can afford training and being able to travel and do certain things. So there's certain things that had to add up, but I didn't get into the NFL as most, or I'm not going to say most, but as a drafted player, right? I wasn't drafted as, you know, okay, hey, we're bringing you onto the team. It was like, Brett, you can try out. And if you make the tryout, then we'll sign you. But then you still got to make the team. Right? And so I tried out for the Cleveland Browns and I made the team, but then I still had,
right? You had to be like, holy cow, I did it.
I made the team, but then I still had to make the team because you have three parts of the season. You have the organized team activities where it's just like training and some practice with helmets. And then you have training camp, because the NFL can carry 90 guys, I believe, or 95 guys. Back then they were carrying 75 guys. So they would carry 75 guys, and then right as they go into the actual season game one, first week, they cut it down to 53 players. Yeah, 40 players get cut. I had to make it to that to actually make it. What happens is each team gets 8 players to be on the practice team, which is they just practice. They don't travel. They don't play in the games. Those practice people are allowed to be pulled up to the active roster if someone goes down and they need another person. The caveat is, the first 2 years you're in the NFL is the only 2 times that you can be on practice squad. So after that third year, you can't be on the practice squad anymore. What they do with a lot of young players is they'll put them on practice squad to try to hold them, bring them up to the 53-man roster.
Who made these rules? It just sounds so...
I know. Who makes any rule, right?
I'm a lawyer. We get highly regulated every state I'm in. And there's rules I have to follow on everything. And I'm thinking what you're describing, I was like, oh my God, it just sounds, if you were to make that a reality show and have these groups of people get cut at these different intervals.
They do. That's what the NFL does. That's why I forget the name, HBO films it every year. They have, it's called Hard Knocks on HBO. And every single year they highlight a team and they show that whole process from making the team. They pick 3 or 4 guys that are on the cusp. And then there's this whole story behind it. So that's exactly what it is. And so they tried to put me on practice squad, the Cleveland Browns, and then the Patriots picked me up on their active roster, because if you're on practice squad, another NFL team has the ability to sign you to their 53-man roster. When I made it to the New England Patriots, it was like, damn, I made it. But
Brady too, right?
Yeah, Brady and Gronk and all these other great players, Edelman, Wes Welker, all these guys. But that was a surreal moment for me where I was like, you made it, because of all the things that I had to go through in those 6 months to get there. Because I broke my arm my last year in college. I broke my last game in college. I broke my left arm tackling somebody. And I had surgery 2 weeks after that. And then I flew to Nashville to train out there for 6 to 7 weeks to train to go to the NFL. I was in Nashville with a cast on the whole time and training with some really big guys who, you know, Michael Orr. I don't know if you saw Blindside with Sandra Bullock, but I trained with the actual Michael Orr down there, and I had to fight through that. And then I fought through training camp, and I had shin splints.
How do you have a relationship with somebody when you go through that kind of a schedule? Do you just defer to
her? I did. I had a girlfriend at the time. She was in California. I was in Nashville, and then I was in Cleveland, and then we were rocky. I was dealing with that and trying to maintain and stay focused. But so when I got through all that to be signed to the Patriots, I was like, yeah, I made it. I couldn't believe it, but I was just so grateful. And I knew how much I wanted. And I think that's for when you say, what was the biggest challenge? I think that challenge was so big because there were so many different elements and aspects that were brought into it. And it forced me to give every single thing that I had. Physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually at the time, just praying, and it all came to fruition. And so it showed me what you can truly accomplish if you throw everything at the wall. But it's got to be everything. There was no doubt in my mind that I wasn't going to make it. That's the thing. There was no doubt. It never crossed my mind. Like,
we're a master manifester, man. You could put things, I'm just calling you out on that. I'm just saying, like, you can manifest really well. And when you put all pistons at something,
yeah.
That's what I said.
But that's the reason why I'm a master manifester, because of that situation. Because if I didn't go through that, I wouldn't understand it the way I understand it now. Right. I understand it at a whole nother wavelength because of that. And so I know that if I really truly want something, I know exactly how to get it, because I know exactly how to completely avoid all distractions and focus on that one thing. And just go deep in it. And so, like, now that I've had this shift in consciousness and an awakening, it's like, how do I do this for the world? I've done this for myself. I know how to do this for myself. How do I do this for the world so that the world can do it for
integrating the world by sharing your message?
That's part of it. But I can share this message. You can listen to this podcast. You can say, man, I'm inspired. I'm motivated. I learned a couple of things here and there. But like, now what? What are the steps that I take? Where do I go from here? I'm working this job I don't like. I'm not making the money that I want. I'm in a relationship that I don't like. I'm overweight. I don't have confidence in myself. I don't know. I'm not really religious, but I don't know how to access other. I don't meditate. I don't do breath work. Like, where do I start? That's the thing that I want to bring to the world. Because there's a lot of people who don't have a lot of direction. Perfect example. I run one of the largest high school youth academies for football in LA. And we train kids from, some kids are like as young as 11, but really 14 to 18. I realized how pivotal what I do for them.
When do you sleep, man? It sounds like you don't get much sleep, even though you can be about that. I'm hearing what you do, and I'm like, when do you sleep?
Listen, I love my sleep. I'm an athlete, so we love sleep. I get my sleep, but when I'm awake, it's haywire. It's balls to the wall, right? I do not stop. What I realized is these kids, when I was young, and I was bullied from sixth grade all the way to college, and I had these challenges of not fitting in. I never felt like I fit in, and I grew up in a mostly Asian neighborhood, and my high school was 90% Asian, and there were a few Black kids, and the Black kids that were there, I didn't really fit in with. I grew up listening to Blink 182 and Green Day and Metallica and Korn and all this stuff. But then I played football and I loved Deion Sanders and all this. The crossover wasn't there. And so I just had a very hard time fitting in. I was the oldest. I didn't have older siblings. And I didn't have people to talk to deal with certain situations. So I had to figure those out on my own. And so yesterday I had a kid call me who's a senior, and something happened with him and his girlfriend. He was asking me, how should he deal with it? I walked him through it because he called me freaking out. He's like, dude, like I'm tweaking. Like, what? And these young kids say these words. I'm like, tweaking? What the hell is tweaking? Riz. Yeah, Riz, exactly. I'm tweaking. And I'm like, oh, okay, you're upset. I get it. And he breaks down like what was going on. And I was just like, you know what? This is how you approach it, right? Approach it with kindness, approach it with love, and don't accuse anybody of anything. Just go in there and figure it out. Be kind. And he did his thing and he said, hey, it worked out and we're good. And he texted me and he said, hey, man, I really want to thank you for helping me out because I definitely would have handled it completely differently. That right there was like, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing.
You're coaching people, but mentoring them, and you're actually advising people. I feel like when people call me for readings, they ask for guidance. You're doing a similar thing. You're just not calling it that. But that you're giving up yourself in such a way that's like light worker work. I'm using those terms and verbiage because.
Yeah, no, I get it.
But I believe that's what you're real keen with that. And I feel like that's part of your own, like you were able to take your own perspectives and say, how do I help create something from it that'll be worthwhile in my own endeavor so that I feel good about being able to grow and help others? And that's what I feel like you've been real keen with. It's good. I find that as something that we need more of in this world, more authenticity.
We do. And it's coming. I think the challenge is that how do you make money doing that? And I know for me, I went through a good 5 or 6 years stumbling and fumbling on like, how am I going to make money doing this? Before I was in finance and doing business consulting, and finance was like a race to the bottom. You manage money, you're asking all these rich people for money and you're taking 1% off the top and the firm
corporate
gets 40.
Stuff just doesn't resonate
with you. The structure. Yeah, the structure and bureaucracy, the politics, it doesn't resonate spiritually. The container doesn't allow for flow. It's stagnant energy. And when I got out of that, part of that was when I started doing breath work and all that stuff. And I started realizing, okay, I'm here to help people, but what am I going to help people in? And I thought it was business. And so I was doing business consulting and helping people scale businesses. And it was great. But at the same time, I realized I'm not helping you build your business. I'm helping you build you. I'm not helping you make money. Yeah, I'm going to show you some numbers and ways to strategize and market and things like that because I love being creative. But at the same time, if you're not confident enough to step up, to go to that meeting, to step up and ask that person for capital, to ask that person for what it is that you want, it's not going to happen. I started realizing I'm not here to coach your business. I'm here to coach you. And so that's when it started to shift more towards like high performance. And I thought, it's how can I help you perform at your best? How can I build a Ferrari out of you? And then I realized this isn't a race. This is a journey. A Ferrari, you're moving. You're not seeing what you're flying by. You're not seeing it. Like, how can I put you in a cruise ship, in a yacht? You get to experience all of the beauties of life. This from the window, from the bow, from underneath the deck, right? How can you experience all of that? And that's when I started getting into the transformative coaching. And then it's led into relationships and love as I started to get certified in breath work and started to work with women and understanding how to hold space and understanding a lot of their issues and challenges that they've been dealing with, as well as the men that I help who are awakened. It's not as many, because I would say the transmission of spirituality is coming through the feminine, which is, it's natural. It makes sense. But the men who are awakened and the ones that I am awakening that are starting to, you know, hey, like I see you posting this. I'm interested in what you're talking about. Like, how do I help shift that narrative? How do I help people find love? Because we're all here to find it. It's first within ourselves and then within the whole.
It's such a challenge in so many ways. I have my close friends who are struggling with it. I say it starts with self-love first. And then once you grow into that, you then when the relationship develops, you'll be in a better position than if you don't have your own stuff healed from or working. That's why I decided to go on my own healing journey. Like, I'm all about self-improvement and betterment. And I feel like the only way when I learned through COVID was, for me, it was having cancer and life changes, COVID, et cetera. And then I realized mental health is such a big part of who we are. Like, we don't talk about it enough. And someone in the 1970s couldn't keep his vice presidency because it got out at the time that he had gone through mental health treatment. Nowadays, I would think everybody on this planet has some type of treatment, hopefully, after what we all been through.
Right. But
I think that I respect like the NFL and other organizations and are trying to shed light on these things. I want to ask you, in terms of mental health, do you feel like it's a big part of the mind, body, spirit challenge that we all try to master while we're here on this planet?
I think that's a loaded question, Jason. Yeah, absolutely. Mental health is really emotional health, because it starts with the emotion first, and then the emotion becomes the mental, and then the mental creates the belief system, and then the belief system creates the personality, and the personality creates who you are. If we start with the emotion and being able to understand the emotion and then transmute the emotion, because there's things that happen in your life that have no real recollection on who it is that you are. For instance, I got in a little fender bender the other day. And
hopefully you're okay.
Yeah, I was good. I was good. And I swerved out and the guy hit my rim. So there was no real damage on my car. But the whole time driving home, I was paranoid. Like, I didn't even know how to drive.
I understand. Right? When you have an accident or something, you can't drive after it.
You're like, I'm looking over my shoulder and I know that my mirror is not showing anybody over on the right-hand lane, but I'm still paranoid to shift. And it took me the rest of the day to get out of that, because our body takes on trauma from every single thing that happens in our life. And the bigger the situation, the more trauma we take on. And so that fear of shifting lanes, that fear of looking over the shoulder, or that fear of actually getting in another car accident, I'm swerving through cars like I normally would, but I'm like, oh shoot, am I going to hit this car? When I knew I'm good.
Yeah, it's a fear. Fear is a big, powerful force. Either way you look at it, you got to overcome that, maintain it, or rationalize it. It's not a real thing. What if?
Exactly. But it all comes back to that. That situation created those emotions behind it. It isn't because I'm afraid to drive. It was because I just got hit. Certain times we refer back to those emotions from a year ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and then we bring that emotion to present day, and then we create anxiety, stress, and fear around it when it's none of that. It's just we're afraid as human beings to go back and repeat cycles, even though we repeat a lot of the same cycles. For instance, how many people who get open heart surgery go back to eating the same way that they were eating previously?
High percentage.
How many smokers who have lung cancer keep smoking? Because we only can identify with the pain at that time, because we are taught to forget things. We're very similar to animals, except we just have a conscious mind. Because if a gazelle gets chased by a cheetah and escapes, that gazelle goes back and doesn't even think about being chased by that cheetah, right? He's completely, I'm fine. All right, the cheetah's gone, threat's gone, okay? But for us, we remember that and we hold that. And so we only really remember pain once it starts coming back again. And we're like, oh shit, we're going back there, right? And so it's like this loop of desire that we keep going through, because one, we're trying to handle ourselves emotionally and find how to emotionally handle stability, right?
Rejection sucks in relationships. Getting rejected by someone you care about.
Yeah, 100%. Like, when you look at the five things that people deal with that lead to fear, rejection is one of them. Rejection is number two on that list, because that's the reason why we're afraid to show up in the world the way we want to show up. Because it's like, what if I get told no? What if I get talked about? What if I get laughed at? And that just goes back to being a first grader or a second grader when you have to go up to the class or somebody makes fun of you or somebody knocks something out of your hand. They tease you because of your shoes. I used to wear Vans back in the day when it wasn't cool for Black kids to wear Vans. I remember those days. So like when I would get dressed, and I'm different now. When I was younger, when I would get dressed, I'd be thinking about what everybody else thought I was going to look like, not what I wanted to look like. What I see the biggest issue or the biggest challenges with a lot of people in this world is that we're not showing up how we want to show up. We're showing up how we think everybody else wants us to show up. And that's where the real style comes in. When you talk about style and you talk about someone truly being authentic, that's authenticity. Authenticity is showing up exactly how the freak you want. Anybody, without you caring about what anybody has to say.
Reducing the fear, right?
So it's not even fear. It's not, you don't even realize the fear because you just are who you are. It's like an iguana. Iguana doesn't walk outside and, oh man, my skin's shedding. Like what are people thinking? What are the other iguanas going to think? Because he's just waking up doing his thing.
When you are interacting in the world, have our life, there's people like talking to you is very deep, right? But there's a lot of people that can't get deep when they express themselves. They can't expose their own vulnerabilities. They can't express their own emotions. Mm-hmm. How do you work with people like that? Do you take them, and if they come to you, there's so many people that are closed off emotionally, for example. If you ask somebody, what's your favorite music? And they say all kinds, because they don't want to expose any vulnerabilities or anything personal about themselves. Like, how do you work with people like that? Do you like have the Gene Keys thing you do, or do you do breath work, or a mixture of both, or intuitive?
Like therapy, when you go to a therapist and you're trying to get to know them and they're trying to get to know you. It's a situation of, can I trust this person? And it's the same way in dating. You go on a date and you're sitting across the table from somebody and guys are asking all these questions and looking at body language and everybody's, I don't know if you drink, but before you guys have a drink, everybody's tight. And then once the alcohol kicks in, you guys loosen up and start having a little bit more fun. At least that's how my dates have gone in the past. But you open up once you start to trust. And sometimes trust is extremely difficult with someone who's never been able to trust or has deep rooted issues in trust. And so the fastest way that I move through some of those emotions is I just get them to breathe. We just do a quick little breath work exercise that opens them up and allows them to trust, allows them to let go. And because when you let go, you let in.
Everything is possible. Grow a lot. And yep. The universe brings you the energy, fill the voids.
Exactly. So I have to open people up to the fact that they want to be helped, because some people truly want to be helped, but they don't know how to help themselves. They're their biggest challenge. They're the biggest wall in the way is themselves. And the great thing I love about breathwork that's different than meditation is a lot of people can't meditate because a lot of people's minds are just so hyper stimulated that they can't turn off and they can't go to that place. Because meditation is a practice. It's an advanced practice. If you haven't done it for several years and worked with someone who's an expert in meditation or has just really done your own practice for a long time, it's very challenging to do. And so breath work, you really don't need 100 hours, 200 hours. You literally need come to my event, lay on the yoga mat for 35 minutes, and you will be a different person coming off that yoga mat. Now, after you're that different person, that's when the journey starts. Because you're going to awaken certain things that you didn't realize you were dealing with. You're going to realize certain things that you didn't know about yourself. And then it's, where do I go from here? That's where we start developing the plan, because most people don't have a plan. Most people don't have a life plan. Most people don't have a game plan. Most people don't even know how to get to the destination if it wasn't for the GPS, right? So how do you develop that? What does that look like for you? And I'm a big believer in one size doesn't fit all. I take a very curated approach to how I help people because everybody's dealing with something very different, right? I see certain patterns and things like that. I'm always looking at each person that I work with as a painting, and it's a blank slate. And I want to figure out how we're going to create magic on their slate, on their blank canvas. It's truly to create magic. It has nothing to do with me helping you change your life. It has everything to do with me helping you realize who you are so you can realize what it is you want. There's no ego involved. It's not like, oh, this has to happen. This has to go this way. It's going to go whatever way the universe wants it to go. And I'm just here to be a guide, just to be a guide. Just like you have a waiter that comes to your table and they tell you about the specials of the day and they help you navigate the menu and ask if you have any questions. I'm just here to point out what things I see that are holding you back from what you say you truly want. But then on the flip side of that, I use my intuition and I also use Gene Keys to understand if it's something they truly want or if it's something they think they truly want, right? Because I used to think I wanted a lot of things until I realized that was just my ego talking based on my situation and my circumstances.
I just, when I talk to you in these conversations, I know we're recording this for the show right now, but I always find inspiration in what you talk about because of the depth of where you can go in the conversation. Not a lot of people can peel the onion back so to an extent with a methodology and have the mind of, you have this process you utilize. It's very unique, but very
Thank you, Jason.
For people to work with. That's, I'm just reading the energy as you talk and see when you break things apart and then put them back together. It's kind of, I see you like doing that in your visualization as you work with people. So it's pretty impressive.
Thank you. You, where it comes from is for me learning, if anything is complex, I'm a Libra, first of all. So I'm all about balance. It's gotta be balanced. If it's too far left or right, I gotta bring it back to the center. And for me,
I'll drown if it's not balanced. It has to be balanced. I gotta get away from it.
Exactly. And so for me, when I learn something, the best way for me to learn it is to make it as simple as possible. Like humanly, if I'm teaching something or if I'm explaining something, it has to be so simple a 5-year-old can understand it. And that way everybody understands it. So I the way that I speak and the way that I coach and I train is I make it so simple to where you understand it. Your body understands it. Your mind understands it. You understand it emotionally. And then we go through it. Because if you don't, it's challenging. And so that's part of the reason, I guess, why my mind works the way it works is I hated being a kid having to try to figure something out and it's all complex and using all these big words that I don't understand. I have to learn the words. And so it's this whole process.
My brother played high school and college football and suffered from concussions pretty bad. And he had to give it up. And because of that, I want to dedicate some programming to CTE stuff and awareness. And I want to ask you, with your own experience in the NFL, being an athlete, what are your viewpoints on the whole CTE thing and what steps could be taken to reduce risk with it, or people who suffer from concussions, like what kind of support do they need? You know, those kind of, that stuff interests me because I just think, you know, talking to you, you guys are human beings and you excel and you're in the final cuts, but then you still have to deal with all these complex things like injuries and brain injury. There's a high, the statistics are pretty scary to think that when you have all those types of things in sports you're engaging in, any active sport, contact sports, that CTE is a real potential for a lot of people. And I didn't know if that's something you have an opinion about or what your viewpoints are about it.
I'll say this is that playing football is a choice. And that is, it's divine will at its finest. You know what the situations are. I know you're a kid and you're like, F it, I'll be strong forever. I'll be able to do this forever. You still make that choice. And then parents are making that choice to allow their kids to play. The one thing I will say is that there needs to be more support on the back end of the NFL, because there's a lot of players that I know that have gone through significant issues, whether it be brain issues, back issues, neck issues. I'm going through a dispute right now with some of the injuries that I had. The NFL fights you tooth and nail to actually get any help, to get any benefit. And I know a lot of times guys are seeking monetary help, but it's this guy sacrificed his life to play for you for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 years. And you're not really giving them the support that you need yet. You're a $1 billion company. So I would say the thing around that is that there just needs to be more support holistically surrounding health. I know they have some good health programs and things like that. I know they just created a new program where they give a certain amount of money every year for like chiropractors and therapy and things like that, which are great. I don't think we have enough information as well on CTE. I think it's still very new. And so I think there needs to be more research and studies on the exact effects and then how that translates into the individuals who are old, because I'd say the oldest NFL players are now in their 70s. We're now starting to get there.
That's true, because you guys are, it's a new thing.
It's newer. I saw one of the first halftime shows on Instagram. It was like 1957 and these cheerleaders were like jumping around like horses, and it was the most hilarious thing that I was watching. But we've come a long way, but we're still very young in terms of a sport. It's not like soccer or baseball that's been going on since the early 1900s. I believe that we need more help. I believe we need more support from the owners. And
you get support when you leave, like for vocational support? Hey, you just played in the NFL. You're in the top cut.
It depends.
How do you get on your own? What do you do?
It depends. It depends on if you have credited seasons. So the NFL they have pensions. They have certain benefits that are given to individuals based on the amount of time that they play. But you have to play 3 years to qualify for it. So if you don't make it 3 years as an active roster, which I did, thank God.
Thank God,
you don't get it. So for instance, my younger brother played football in the NFL as well. He's a coach at UC Davis right now. He didn't make it 3 years as an active player. So when he left, he didn't have a lot of the resources that I had, but yet he still played.
That sounds crazy to me.
I know.
You made the final cut for 2 years. Why wouldn't, it's like being tenured as a teacher or something, getting your, that's crazy.
Yeah, but that's how this is the thing is, if you boycotted the NFL, guess what they would do? They'd go find another 1,700 people who are willing to play. And that's the thing is that somebody will always take your spot or want to take your spot. So the leverage to really negotiate against the owners, it's not really there because there's no leverage. So
I didn't mean to get into the minutiae of the NFL.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
I'm talking about, because I feel like you see all these athletes on TV and you wonder, oh, this one got injured, that one got injured. And I'm thinking to myself, what happens when they're done playing? Do they get long-term support? Are they given the adequate resources with holistic stuff, or is it just, hey,
you have to be pretty, and it's the newer, it's the younger guys. So it's the guys who are my age and a little bit older. The guys who are in their 50s and 60s, they didn't have a pension. They didn't have the health benefits that we have. We have it really good, to say the least, compared to them. It's still not where it should be. As I see guys in their 60s that are broken down, barely can walk, back problems, knee problems, neck problems, and they rarely have the support they need. I'm blessed to be playing football at this time. And quite frankly, it's gotten a lot better because these guys are getting paid in college now. So some of them probably won't play in the NFL. It's like some of these kids aren't even good enough to play in the NFL in college.
You think of the numbers, right? You think you just gave those numbers of how you go through the different cuts, and then you're
exactly. But like, kids are in college making $1 million a year right now. Wow. Which, if I was playing college football right now, I would do it in a different life.
I love that. That
they can. I love it too.
They're providing that service and then proving themselves in such a way that's like, hey,
it's due time, because colleges, universities have been making millions, and if you calculate over the last 30, 40 years, billions of dollars off of football, basketball, baseball, softball. And the athletes have not gotten paid. I was getting like $1,280 as a stipend a month living in Westwood when I was in college.
You have a second job or something?
I wasn't big enough to have the, see, the linemen were like bouncers at clubs and stuff. That's where they made their extra cash. I was a smaller guy, so I was like in the club hanging out. I wasn't outside bouncing. there's a few guys who had some jobs to offset that. But for the most part, no, you're going to school, you were playing football, you're a struggling college student. And it was part of the college experience. And I remember we had this place called Buck 50s. We used to be able to get a big, huge burrito for $1.50 after a night of drinking. Those were the times. Like, now these kids are driving Ferraris and stuff. You go to college locker room and
are they influencers?
Oh, dude, they're influencers. It's wild how much money these kids are making right now. But again, it's great to see that, because we struggle with eating.
Because of your work and other athletes before you is what's created the new opportunity.
Yeah.
Yep. Hopefully future athletes will have the same opportunities and even better ones. That's how I look at it.
That's exactly it. It's hopefully everybody that comes before us doesn't have to deal with the same stuff we dealt with.
Yeah, I definitely could have you on again just to talk about these different topics, because you have.
We can talk about whatever you like, my man.
You have such a wealth of knowledge in different areas based on what you've done in your life. And I admire that, because for me, I can learn from hearing what people talk about with their experiences. I kind of tune in. I just pick up like images, or I'll sense things. And I think everything you're doing right now, you're on the right track for yourself. I will tell you that. I told you that privately, that the future for you looks very bright in the coming years. And I'm excited to see where you're going, because what I see you're doing and all the work behind the scenes of what you do, it shows me the strong resiliency for a very big opportunity coming up. And I think you'll see that when it presents itself, but I think it has to do with travel and it has to do with world views and you being you and all your light. Like, I have an image of a peacock that brings out its feathers and it's like real big and it towers over life itself. And people know from that person what they're all about because of who they are, not even what you say, but your actions precede you. That's the kind of stuff I see you're going to be doing stuff in the future with. And I think a lot of interesting things are going to come out of your projects you're going to be working in. So I'm excited.
No, thank you, Jason. I'm excited for life, and I make plans and I just let them fall where they may. I'm not tied to anything. My biggest thing is just bringing love and joy to the people that I work with on a daily basis, to my family, to my friends, to the guy at the gas station, to the homeless guy on the street where I can pull over and give him a couple bucks to go do whatever he needs to do. Like, when I travel, if I can help some people out while I'm traveling, and when I get to jump on podcasts like this and be able to voice what I love and care about, that's what I'm truly here for. When it's all said and done, I don't know what I'm actually going to have accomplished, but I just hope that when I am done, people can say, man, that dude inspired me to take this, to do this, to try this, and let it fall where it may.
I'm going to put all your information in our show notes and stuff. I want to ask if you could tell our audience where they can find you on your site or social media, whatever you prefer to share. I'm all about that. So
yeah, no, I'm all over. I'm on social media. I'm not a TikToker. That's past my generation.
I have an account and I think I have 200 followers and I like go on there.
Oh gosh.
Just to go look at what the TikTok thing's all about. But then I go off it. I go back on Instagram. I'm too connected to certain ones.
Completely. I know. I didn't jump on the TikTok wave. I should have, but it was just like another thing to manage, which I didn't need at the time. But Instagram, I'm the most active on. You can find my profile at Brett_Lockett. And then you can go to my website, which is just brettlockett.com. And you can go to my YouTube channel and see all the great things that we're doing and how we're helping people.
I appreciate you coming on. I feel like you'll be back on in the future at some point when you're sharing these amazing experiences I see coming up for you. My show is an open door for you. So if you ever have interesting things, spiritual things or topics you'd like to share with us, I'd love to have you back on just because I feel like anytime we can talk, it's like the audience can benefit from stuff that's being shared from perspective to just everything else. So the insights.
I'd love to. We'll definitely come back. I'll come back on and we'll talk about alchemy next time because that's the fun one. Oh, yeah.
That's good. I just want to thank Brett Lockett for coming on the show today. You come across different people that really can inspire you. And I think Brett's one of those people just from his actions and experiences. And I think you can tell just from the interview how inspirational certain people can be in our lives and other people's lives. I'm real big on pay it forward. I think it's important that when you have life experience and you go through challenges and then you overcome those challenges from being in the NFL, for example, to other things that Brett's been doing now in his life, there's things you can glean from that. And we learn through examples. And sometimes our examples are important what we do and how we conceptualize things. I would just tell everyone in the audience, if you struggle, if you're bullied, if you're given some negative situation that you feel like you're stuck with, there's opportunities for growth. There's opportunities for change. You can change an environment. You could change a job. You could change a relationship. All those kind of things that are hard to do. Sometimes you have to make that decision to rip off the Band-Aid and do it. What happens when you do it? You become empowered in such a way that you have so much keen appreciation for having the ability to make the decision to do that. I encourage you, if you're struggling with something and you have fear in your heart, minimize the fear and understand that in your life, the challenges you're going through are learning experiences. Our whole life is school. I've talked about that before and I've gone through some life transitions in the most recent weeks, but I can tell you that I feel the most liberated I've been in years. And I'm excited about what's coming up for myself and for others. So live as broadly as you can. Take as many risks as you can. Don't fear what can be the outcome of something if it doesn't work out. The universe will guide you. You'll see these things through synchronicities, numbers, signs, places, people, whatever it is. I think having someone like Brett on the show today is very important. It's great to get different concepts and things introduced to the audience that I don't get to usually bring on before. Keep an open mind on things spiritually. Open yourself up. Check out the Gene Keys. Check out Brett's website. I'll have all the information in the show notes. And this is me, season 6. I've been doing this stuff for 6 seasons. I love it, guys. I love doing podcasting more than anything else. And I promise you, you'll have a lot more interesting shows to come back to this year. There's some priority shifting in my own life that I'm very happy to announce in the coming months, and things are very important. Just focus on the moment. Love as much as you can unconditionally to the people in your life that matter to you. Tell people you love them and tell them how important they are. Those are things that I think matter. And in terms of just everything else, appreciate everything because we only get one life and life is fragile. And so I don't mean to go on this whole soapbox about that, but keep all those things in mind. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. Stay positive because when you're positive, anything is possible.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Social Psychic Radio Show. Don't forget to join us for another episode next time. If you enjoyed the show, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and give us a review on iTunes. You can also check us out on Facebook, and don't forget to visit the Social Psychic YouTube channel. Until next time, it's a big world out there. Keep an open mind. Embrace your paradigms and know that the universe is always yours to explore.
Hey there, I'm DC. I host the Rock Podcast, Back to the Arena, The Interviews. It's about a 30-minute podcast where I talk one-on-one with a band who has released new music. You can find us on all the best podcast sites like Spotify, Apple, Google, iHeartRadio, and more. If you're a rock fan like me, subscribe today to Back to the Arena, The Interviews. Electric acid.
Welcome to Tuning Into Sound Wellbeing, where we harmonize your mind, body, and soul. I'm Amanda, your sound therapy expert.
And I'm Stephen, the curious explorer uncovering the mysteries of sound.
Together, we explore vibrations, frequencies, and the power of sound therapy and tuning forks.
Discover ancient wisdom, reduce stress, and tune into a healthier life. Subscribe to Tuning Into Sound Wellbeing today.
Electric Acid.